Chapter 1. The Bloody Brook. The brook ran red. York bent to collect a few more stones for his sling, but now his gaze focused on the red, swirling water. He glanced up at the stone wall of the little round keep that peered over the vale from the summit of the rocky hill. Purple and pink heather stood out in bunches amid the short green grass of the heathland. The brook curled around the base of the hill and slipped into a stand of aspens whose leaves quivered in the cool morning breeze. The guard on the walls stood erect, facing the snow-capped peaks of the Avine Mountains to the east. A thin line of grey smoke had attracted the guard's attention. But the brook ran with blood. Surely this was more important than a little smoke. York rose and strode up the creek, wondering what might have caused the water to turn red. His carpentini boots pressed deep into the mud. The morning's mist had moistened the earth and dusted the leaves of the mahogany and bayberry with little teardrops. The heather glistened in the slanting light. York passed under the stand of aspen. The lingering mist clung to his black hair. His linen trousers and shirt soon sagged about his lithe frame, heavy with moisture. The air tasted sweet and clean. York stepped through a land that had long been widowed of its inhabitants as the ruined buildings and stone walls bore silent witness. The rotted beams of houses and barns stabbed out of sunken holes in the ground like bones reaching from the grave for the life that had betrayed them. York had come with his mother and sister to breathe vitality back into these mountain valleys, to seek a new homeland where his suffering people could find the strength to survive. A wail floated to him on the morning mist. York stopped beside a crumbling stone wall and scanned the aspen grove, listening. The wail came again, ghostly and mournful as it pierced the haze. It had a strange, unearthly quality that was filled with pain and terror. York's heart beat faster, and he almost fled back to the keep. But maybe it was one of his own people. They might need his help. York quickened his pace until he came to the great boulder that sprawled across the narrow valley. The brook spilled over one side of the boulder in a glittering waterfall. Something bobbed at the crest in a gentle rhythmic cadence, like the slow, regular breath of life. The water that splashed over the mossy surface came with bold red streaks. York scrambled up the boulder beside the little waterfall until he stood peering out over the pond where he and his baby sister had fished for brook trout the day before. Horror gripped York's stomach. A dam of linen-clothed bodies clogged the channel, as if they had been pushed up by the beavers in an attempt to stop the running water. Men, women, and children, all silent and staring in death, bobbed in the current, bumping up against one another. Their blood spread like a stain to colour the water as it spilled over the boulder. The wail rose up again behind him. York tore his gaze from the gruesome scene in search of the pitiful creature that made that awful, haunting noise. A dark head shifted among the bushes, where a little boy, no more than 3 years old, curled up in a tiny ball of ragged clothing. The boy had a ghastly wound on the side of his head that still dribbled blood. Terror clutched at York's throat. Whoever had done this couldn't be far away. He scrambled along to the top of the boulder and ducked into the underbrush to where the boy lay. "Hush," York said as he reached out to touch the child. He needed to silence him. The boy jumped and cried out. York clamped a hand over his mouth and looked around. "Hush," he said again. "I won't hurt you." He spoke in the Carpentini dialect because the boy wore the linen clothes and whip-stitched boots peculiar to the Carpentini. The boy stared at him with big brown eyes. York lifted the boy into his arms when something splashed behind him. He pulled the child close and spun. A man with a dark streak of dried blood on his face stood with one foot on a log and the other in the water. He wore a long green tunic with loose sleeves favoured by the Bracari. His black hair that had been cropped short in front was matted with globs of mud. The Bracari had frozen in place to stare at York, as if he expected York to miss him if he didn't move. York glanced at the bodies. This man had been injured in the fight. Where were the rest of the Bracari? York looked around as the hollow fear filled his chest. He was alone in the wood with an injured child and a Bracari who would not want to be discovered. York hugged the boy close to his chest, slid down the boulder into the aspen grove, and sprinted for the keep. He had to warn the rest of the Carpentini that the Bracari had found them again, before it was too late. The boy whimpered as York's feet pounded the earth. Branches lashed York's face. He ducked and wove. A splash and heavy crashing sounded behind him. A rock flew past his head and slammed into a tree. He ducked, clutching the boy close to his chest. He broke from the cover of the aspens into the dirt trail that skirted the stream. The top of the keep peaked over the valley, but no one was looking his way. The keep disappeared from view as York cut through the undergrowth, broke from the trees, and scrambled up the hill. The walls of the keep now loomed in front of him. "Bracari!" he cried out, but the word was lost as he gasped for air. "Bracari!" he tried again. A horseman appeared in front of him, and then another, but they weren't Carpentini or Bracari. The bigger one held a huge longbow with an arrow on the string. The other was smaller, maybe as old as York, only 15 or 16. He carried a short recurve bow and had long, blonde hair that he pulled back. York shied away from them. They blocked his approach to the keep, the only safe place he had. York leapt over a low, stone wall. "Stop!" someone shouted, but the accent was not Carpentini. York chanced a glance back to see the man with the longbow rein his horse around towards the trees. He dropped the rein and drew the bow. The Bracari dove back into the cover of aspens. "I said stop," the man commanded again. York slipped on the damp grass and fell to his knees. A stone slapped the earth beside his hand. York struggled to his feet and scrambled up the hill, clutching the boy with one arm and tearing at the moist earth with the other as he strained to claw his way up the slope to the keep. His lungs burned. His arms ached from carrying the child. His legs had become so heavy. Shouts now came from the keep above him, but they would be too late. York would never make it with two horsemen and a Bracari on his tail. Hooves beat the earth, and York tensed in preparation for the pain of the arrow. The string slapped, he cringed and stumbled, but the pain never came. York righted himself and craned his neck around. The Bracari that had been chasing him fell on his face on the green hillside, with an arrow quivering in his leg. York blinked in confusion. The large horseman leapt from his saddle, jammed a knee into the Bracari's back, grabbed his hair and yanked his head back. He pressed a blade to his throat. "When I say stop, I mean it," he growled. His accent was strange. York paused, then stopped. His chest heaved and his legs trembled as the shorter rider rode up to him and slipped from the saddle. It was a woman, a beautiful woman, not too many years older than himself. The concern on her face confused him. "Are you hurt?" she said. Her accent was strange too. He shied away, trying to shield the boy as she reached for him. She paused and cocked her head. "May I?" York pressed the boy close to his chest, uncertain. Who were these strangers? Why would they shoot the Bracari? "I'm not going to hurt him," she said. "But he needs care." York hesitated, glanced at the still bleeding wound on the boy's head, and handed the child to the woman. She pulled the child close and whispered in his ear. She caressed his cheek and kissed his brow. Then she knelt, swung her water skin to her front, yanked the plug with her teeth, and poured water into the boy's mouth. The boy sputtered and then began to drink. "Are they all right?" the man called. York glanced over to see the Bracari tied up like a pig for roasting. He bent over with his hands on his knees and tried to catch his breath, trying to understand what had happened. Sweat dripped on the grass to join the glittering drops of the morning rain. He was alive, and that was something. The jangle of weapons brought York's head up. 2 dozen men rushed down from the keep and formed a semicircle around them. Reed stood at their head. He was a big man with a fiery beard and a temper to match. York had never seen the man who could stand up to Reed. Reed waved, and 6 men raced down the hill into the woods. They would be searching for more Bracari. "Lay down your weapons," Reed ordered. The young woman ignored him. She poured water over the gash on the child's head and cooed to him. The man with the longbow raised his hands. "We're not Bracari," he said. "I'm Brian of Wexford. I'm not your enemy."
"Enemies are all we seem to have these days," Reed said. "I want to see that boar on the ground."
For a moment, York thought Brian might refuse, but he sighed and laid the bow on the ground. The Bracari squirmed, and Brian set his boot on his back and pressed down. York saw the smile twitch on Reed's lips.
"I've never heard of Wexford," Reed said.
Brian shrugged. "It's not much to talk about. More a collection of shacks, really.
Most people in Wexford don't really know where they are."
Reed didn't seem amused with the answer. He waited, fingering the edge of the long knife he held in his hands.
"It's in Coal," Brian said, "on the edge of the Oban Plain."
"An Almani, this far north," Reed said. "Either you're crazy or you have a death wish."
"Neither. I'm looking for someone."
"And your new king sent you?"
Brian shook his head. "King Amir knows I'm here, but he didn't send me. I came on my own." Reed scowled as a murmur swept through the men. They shuffled their feet and a few advanced towards Brian.
"Didn't he live with the Salasani?"
someone said.
York had heard of this King Amir.
He had been raised Salasani and had led a coup to seize the crown of Coll. Rumour said he was planning an invasion of the Heathland. Reed pursed his lips.
"Spy? Scout?"
Brian smiled and shook his head. "I told you. It's a personal matter." The Bracari captive wriggled again, and Brian shoved him back to the ground.
"Look," the young woman said as she stood. "This child needs care. I want hot water and clean bandages now."
Reed studied her for the first time, then glanced back to Brian with raised eyebrows.
"My wife, Finola," Brian said. "You brought a woman into a land spilling over with blood."
Reed scowled.
"You don't look like a fool, but she's not that easy to leave behind," Brian interrupted.
"I'm going to the keep," Finola said, and strode off up the hill with the child in her arms.
"Hold!"
Reed bellowed, and York thought he might attack the woman. But Reed seemed more confused than anything. Finola paused and glanced back at him with a defiant smirk that dared him to challenge her. York looked at Brian, who was smiling. Reed sheathed his knife and waved towards the Bracari.
"Bring him," he said,
and stalked up the hill past Finola without looking at her. Two men grabbed the Bracari and dragged him towards the keep. The rest of the men followed, leaving York and Brian alone. Brian pursed his lips at York and cocked his head to one side.
"Do you think that means I can pick up my bow now?"
York smiled despite himself.
"Probably," he said.
Brian snatched the bow from the grass, gathered the reins of the two horses, and led them towards the keep. York noted that the horse Brian rode was a black mare with a silver-speckled rump, and Finola's was a buckskin. They were beautiful horses, and York secretly longed for one of his own. They had lost their only horse months ago to the Bracari.
"Is he always that friendly?" Brian asked in a conversational tone.
"No," York said. "He's usually a lot meaner."